manners, have the planning department put together one that combines the best of that. So then we have basically a transmittal sheet that stays with that project all the way through.
Right.
And then the database is underneath, and the approval and legislature and everything else feeds up to that document.
Right. And it's especially helpful for those bewildered neighborhoods that have no idea. You know, the city is basically saying them, here's how you should do this.
Right.
And I think for those that don't have any process, they would welcome that.
All right. And then, so according to the criteria that we laid out just briefly earlier today, whether achieving the balance and whether it's actionable and we can follow up on it, we would agree that this is a pretty good goal to have.
Yeah, and we do have the implementation piece at the end of each of those numbered, or each of the recommendations. For instance, on this one, the implementation, we're looking, we can do this right away once we have some budgetary approval to be able to set up the system. There are some ordinance changes that will have to be made as far as notification system, and the fact that probably by ordinance they're going to have to submit to the city to start getting the city involved in this.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that needs to change with the A1A? And A1A. Okay. Let's go on to A2A.
Standardize the process of notification review of projects during the pre-application phase of the project. And this kind of defines who they have to meet with and make sure that they're brought into it. And there'll be a checklist that will be included within the database to be able to follow this.
And I think here again, I mean, we've got the word encourage a near-term meeting. And so, A, we don't have a time frame for what does near-term mean? How long do we want to give before a meeting should occur? And if we're going to encourage a meeting, I mean, Ed suggested this as well, or why wouldn't we just require a meeting? And I think there's a way to, and maybe these questions that follow that, where should the meetings occur, who should attend, blah, blah, blah. I don't even know that those need to be addressed in this recommendation. I think maybe there's a way that we say, you know, there could easily be a standard letter, for example, from city staff that goes out that the developer has to convene this meeting, and maybe there's a standard letter that explains this developer's only at a pre-application phase. You know, you're not going to get all the information you want about the project or about, you know, I think it's sort of spelled out nicely at the top of page 19. You know, there's a balance that needs to be struck as part of this between your desire for information and the applicant's desire for flexibility and not revealing all their cards at that point. But the developer is required to convene this meeting. You're invited to attend. And I think it's the developer, it's on the developer then to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to say something like 30 days?
30 days.
Instead of a near term?
Yeah.
30 days after they've...
Within 30 days they have to schedule this meeting.
Yeah, after they've registered the project. Huh. You got 30 days to schedule a meeting.
And they
I really like what you just said about describing the framework of that meeting, because, you know, I think maybe all of us have seen it where some people will come from that meeting saying they didn't tell us anything, and other people will come out of that meeting saying, you know, well, this is already a done deal.
Right.
And neither of those are the case.
Right.
But just, you know, framing it properly is really important.
And it could be just a standard letter that sort of explains the process and tells people where to look for more information,
right.
Links to that project registration page on the city's website then, and just sort of sets the stage in a way.
Right. And even here's what's going to happen
next. Here's what's going to happen next if the project moves forward. It's only at this phase right now. That's what this means. And it could just easily accompany the developers setting up this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to recommend here, I think I would like to tailor it within 30 days setting up the meeting. I think the meeting has to be held and convened and reported on within 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the intent.
Right. Yeah. If you're not ready to do that, then you're not ready to register the project with the city.
I think that's the first thing we got to state here. I think the second thing I heard, and I think is pretty neat, is the idea of having a framework for what information would be disclosed at this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not going to be specific at this point. But yes.
Okay. I really like what you just had to say, and I kind of like this whole idea. Can we be more specific than less specific? If somebody's going to be doing this, can you say, you must say this, 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 and this? You know, here's the baseline information before you can have a meeting. I mean, I think it's reasonable.
I think
how big? How many square feet, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of things we would want in that registration form. you know, when you're registering the project, you got to describe all of what you just said.
You can't say that.
Right. You don't know what you're doing, so.
Yeah, you shouldn't
be doing
that.
Eric, do you want to say something? I mean, we've allowed others to talk. It's up to the chair, but if you're shaking your head in frustration, and you've been an active part of this whole discussion all along.
I think it's important to recognize that different projects are at different stages, and it is a good idea to have very early concepts come before the neighborhood when you don't have a lot of questions answered, when we don't know how many square feet it's going to be. Maybe we only know two or three, you know, we have very little accuracy on how much the square footage is going to be. We don't have any idea how tall stories are. We want to start engaging these conversations early. When we start talking into the pre-application process, we need to be careful about what we're really thinking about. We would like to maybe, we want to have better tracking of what's going on in the pre-application phase. So when someone comes in with an idea, hey, you know what, we're thinking about maybe building a project on top of the parking ramp on East Mifflin Street. Could we start talking with the neighborhood about what we might want to do there? You know, that's pretty early, and we didn't want a whole lot of we didn't want a project proposal yet because we wanted to start talking about what maybe is even within scope. So we don't want to rule out registering this project with the city because I can't check off this box, this box yet, because we don't know what those boxes are going to be. So we want to capture that interaction somehow with the city. We don't want to kill that project because they go to city staff or they go to the alder and say, hey, we're thinking about building on top of this parking ramp, and the alder says, you know what, I can tell you right off the bat that's crazy and it's never going to happen, and that project dies and we never think about it again. Mm-hmm. We want to capture that. As soon as someone has this inkling, we want to find out about it. We want to get a better track of this, but I don't think you can prescribe what the format of that is going to be, because it's going to vary all over the place. So you want to put as little structure on this registration as you can, because we want to start getting a feel for what's going on out there in the community, and then depending on where it is, then you want to, as you continue to go down the process, then you want to add more and more structure. But you don't want to front load that structure.
But I do think you want this meeting to occur fairly soon after project registration, so that the developer can have, the neighborhood stakeholders, the alder, city staff, can start to have that relationship and have initial questions answered before it gets too far. So, but I agree with not putting any more conditions on that meeting, mm-hmm. other than timeline and sort of who needs to be invited.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know what you're saying, but I really am quite uncomfortable with it. You know, what you're saying is developers could lob some ideas out there, maybe 5 stories, maybe 7, maybe 13. Okay, so is the neighborhood going to really get a great idea as to exactly what's going on? Are they going to show up? I'd rather have something that's more structured. Okay, I got an idea. I want to do this. I've talked to this bank, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I got an idea.
I think it's important to have that discussion. I agree. I think they do need to come with a little bit more structure. The reason why I think they become, I'm coming from this a different angle. We're talking about a lot of development from a real estate perspective. But if you start really getting down into say, investments such as what we've done at some of the companies I work for, which is more industrial-based or that kind of thing, or maybe even a grocery store, there's already an objective in mind, and there's not a lot that you can tailor it somewhat, but you don't want to leave it so flexible that you can't go, because there's a lot of costs associated with addressing those. I think it's important that there is a minimum, but it doesn't need to be so tight that we discourage people from coming to the process. But I think the minimum can be, hey, just a general sketch, a general idea of the overall investment of what's trying to be made.
Before the clock starts.
And
Is this something that we should ask the neighborhoods to get together and tell us what they want out of this? And we're talking about this kind of being a general framework, and then the approval is go in and implement it. Mm-hmm. Should the neighborhoods be at the table to help say, okay, here's what we want on that initial meeting?
I think that's a good suggestion. I certainly hear what you're saying, Eric, and I think ideally it would be great to have a real dialogue and some give and take about, you know, shared goals and what does everybody want to see here. But I've also seen that go horribly wrong, where the neighbors leave feeling like the developer is either clueless and doesn't know what they're doing, or that they're hiding stuff that they already really have decided, and they're playing the neighborhood, you know, and when neither one of those things was the case. So I'm struggling with how to balance that, what I think is a really good goal of working together, and making sure that there's some structure behind it.
I mean, I can't see developers liking a more structured meeting either, where they have to come forward and say these things about, you know, square footage and building height and all that. They're not gonna necessarily know that at that point, or want to share all of it at that point. I mean, if they know it, I would hope they're sharing it.
But it's also going to change.
They'll
have a general idea of it,
they'll
right?
Have a,
but having
idea.
Sort of a checkbox, a checklist of things they've got to share at that meeting.
Yeah, but I would, look, I agree with you, but kind of from my standpoint, if I was going to come into this meeting, I'll kind of liken it to some other places, but I would come with a basic general sketch so everybody can kind of get a visualization of what I'm trying to achieve. And then I have some basic data. I would be real hesitant on giving data about whatever product I'm going to have there or whatever initial business plan that I have. I would give some general business plans. Here's kind of what I see as the development of the cost, and here's what I would see as the potential return for my investment. And that kind of, I'd be willing to share that. But I think that would be the kind of thing where it wouldn't be general enough. It'd be almost like here's some boxes on the paper, and where you could get some feedback from the neighborhood to say, you know, hey, I like your box, but instead of it being 100,000 square feet, maybe we need to kind of look at it going up a little bit and being, you know, 75,000 square feet, something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Can I just chime in? I think what Eric's getting at, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's a very real problem that I've observed where someone, developer comes to city staff, says, I'm thinking about doing XYZ, and staff carte blanche says, nope, will never happen. Developer goes away, no one ever hears about it. I'm also aware of situations where someone's gone to an alder and says, I want to do this. Oh, says, nope, never happened, and it goes away. Mm-hmm. And these are good ideas that in some cases the neighborhoods actually like these projects. And so some of these projects that could kind of get nipped in the bud right at the start, I think we need to have some way that people can bring, developers can bring these ideas forward without maybe, you know, they may not have even a sketch of what they want to do, because it's somewhat, I'm referring to unique things that are not normal, we want to do an apartment building, we want to do, you know, out of the box type things. And I think, you know, one way that you can address this is if you have a computer based or an internet based or some more software-based registry, you know, program. In any development project, there's going to be a continuum of, you know, elements that need to be submitted to the city until the point in time when you actually receive a permit, which will be logged in the system as well. So you can have a very simple, you know, at the very beginning, you know, contact information and just a brief description of this is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, that might suffice for just the very initial meeting for some projects. And then, okay, the second meeting we're going to have, you know, then we come back then with some actual details. Now other people might want to skip that and just go right to, we really know, you know, we have some idea of the size and square footage.
We really want to be able to go into an area that we may have an option on a land and know whether or not the neighborhood and the alder and the zoning use is going to put up with a mixed-use residential commercial or a car wash. You know, if I say come in and I say I want to do a car wash there, you don't need to come up with a full set of drawings at that point. It's more what's the mass, what's the use, and see if there's any kind of feasibility of being able to do that or what kind of pushback you're going to get right there. I think making it too specific and too standardized as far as what we want will end up hurting us in getting this thing enacted.
Well, as I listened to Eric's comments and what we're discussing about how do we make it too...
I apologize. So,
thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Too structured or not structured enough. You know, and Mark's point about, you know, if a developer comes and says, well, I don't have any idea, I just want to do something. Mm-hmm. Like,
they're not even sure where yet.
Yeah. Speaking from a neighborhood standpoint, we are very leery of those kind of proposals. But at the same time, developers know that there's a neighborhood plan that's been adopted in that area. So they kind of understand there's a height limit that residents will adhere to. You know, if, I'll use East Wash, you know, there's a height plan or a limit of, let's say, 5 stories. And the developer wants to come in and says, I'm going to build something that's 10 stories. Well, it's pretty much, they know going in that it's going to take a while to get that process through. But if they could work within that, as in speaking from a neighborhood standpoint, if the developer is willing to work within the guidelines of the neighborhood plan, and they bring a proposal to the full discussion, I see it as it's a first date between the community and the developer, and you're feeling each other out. And you know, the neighbor has their structure of the neighborhood plan. The developer obviously has their structure of my business plan, how big I needed, how many square foot I needed to make a profit. And so I see it as that first step, as in, and this is where later on we talk about having a skilled facilitator at that meeting to help facilitate that first date, so that neighbors don't feel like, oh, they've got something brewing, but they're not telling us. And developers aren't saying, oh, these are nimbys, they're not going to ever let us build in there, let's just walk away from the table. So that's a very important first meeting that needs to take place. And as much structure and guidance we can help bring those two together, I think it would be in our best interest.
Mm-hmm. So what do we want to recommend here at this stage for the for that initial meeting as a framework?
I think maybe we've spent enough time talking about this particular item that I'd be willing to take a crack at redrafting this based on all the discussion we've just had.
That'd be great. And I think that B, that 2B is some of it could be folded into 2A, because I think a lot of it is just talking about who needs to be notified early mm-hmm. on in the process and how. And maybe it works best to keep it separate, but having it separate makes it look like we're talking about a separate kind of notification or a separate meeting, when really we're talking about ways to get the word out mm-hmm. as the project has just been registered and dialogue is starting.
Well, I see A and B as two strategies.
To do the same thing.
Meet goal two.
Mm-hmm. I would say with B, though, at this point, I don't think it's clear enough who's responsible. Is it the alder's responsibility that we are trying to increase or clarify? Is it the neighborhood association responsibility we're trying to encourage expanded notification on? Is it the developer?
Mm-hmm.
But B, as it's stated, you know, enhanced notification. I'm not a fan of, you know, passive voice, just because it doesn't really let us know very
uh-huh.
clearly
right.
who are we.
Who's doing it?
Who's doing it?
Yeah.
So who do we want to do that? And maybe it's, I think in this case it probably is all three. It's, you know, neighborhood residents, alders, and developer, mm-hmm. and the applicant.
Mm-hmm. But if the city offered tools to create,
yep.
you know, an email list, this is something I've only been complaining about for 5 years, so that, you know, the developers and or alders could use to say, okay, if you want to, you know, participate in and be notified
yeah.
about this project, which may or may not be going anywhere,
sign
up here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I do that completely ad hoc.
Have to recreate it.
And only
time.
Because I'm a techno weenie. And I shudder to think at the tools and or lack thereof that others might be using.
May I
I've
ask a question?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Do I need to register something to do this?
Yeah, okay. Please go ahead.
Thank you.
Comment.
My name is Bert Stitt, just for those of you who may not know who I am. I don't know who I am. There's an interesting thing here. I'm noticing that you are not referencing at all the comments that came in on this. You're not referring back to these comments from the various constituent groups, and specifically Capital Neighborhoods. But others as well.
Well, the CNI document came in before they saw the full narrative. Peter came, mm-hmm. he said, I think that a lot of the narrative that we had in here captured that. Peggy then went back to Peter and said, do you want to come back to us with any kind of additional comments?
Okay. Thank you.
I don't think it's deliberate, Bert. I think it's more, for me at least, it's a sign, just that
it's
I forgot to bring the right folder
today. It's a point
today.
Of clarification with me.
Yeah. It's a good
what I'm noticing, though, is that on page 13, where you seem to make an effort to define what a neighborhood association is, and you say a neighborhood association is a group of residents, business representatives, and other interested citizens, fine and good. As you probably know, Capital Neighborhoods specifically does not include businesses. On page 18, you reference And A2A, the first paragraph, once a project has been registered, as noted above, encourage a near-term meeting with all the following individuals in attendance: the applicant, Alders, Neighborhood Association Presidents, Neighborhood Business Association Presidents. And now they're two different things. And they are either one or they're two in terms of a document like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a little inconsistency there.
He's saying on page 13 that because we have an and Ed raised this as well, that that the way it's written right now makes it sound like a neighborhood association is only a defined neighborhood association if it includes residents, business representatives, and others. Mm-hmm. Instead of, maybe it's just an and or that needs to be in there, or, you know, is a group that includes, well, that could include a combination of, I mean, just needs...
That becomes a fundamental question. What should be recognized neighborhood associations within the city of Madison? Should they include renters, residents, property owners, and businesses?
I think they can include anything that the neighborhood group wants them to include. And I don't necessarily think anyone should be excluded from a neighborhood association necessarily.
But you're saying CNI does in fact exclude, if
you should be allowed to do that, I think. Mm-hmm. You should be allowed to say this is what makes up the neighborhood association. Or you can turn it around and try to specify what the city considers a neighborhood association and then get specific about that.
But I own a business that's located in the First Element neighborhood, and I am not allowed to be a member of CNI.
That is not true. See, that is not true.
I thought that's what you just said.
No. I said that we don't, and there's has to be a clarification there. You can certainly belong to our association. You cannot vote on association business unless you live in the neighborhood.
Okay.
So a person that owns property there has no say.
That's right. In the business of the association, not in terms of attending meetings and coming in and being part of a process that's looking at a project and all that sort of thing, all that is fine. But what people don't seem to understand is that the neighborhood association is an incorporation.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually incorporated, and our membership is specified by that incorporation, and our membership is specified as residents. Now, what you don't seem to be clarifying here is that when it comes to development projects, you want a process that incorporates all of these parties. But you and I would think that you would not want to be telling a neighborhood association how they can incorporate their business.
Well, how would be recognized by the city.
Well, or whether they can be recognized by the city.
I think that actually is a fundamental issue, because otherwise I could decide that I am a neighborhood association. And, I'm the president of the neighborhood association that includes, you know, these boundaries that I set arbitrarily. And now I have a say, you know, equal to Capital Neighborhoods, for example.
Well, here's the other part of all of
without
this.
Any structure for that, you need to have some guidelines to
here's the
who
other
gets to say and who doesn't.
Can I ask a question? I'd like to understand why you would not consider a business owner in your neighborhood not an active member of your neighborhood association. I'm trying to understand why.
Here's the history.
Okay.
I managed Capital Neighborhoods for 10 years during the 90s. And what we discovered was we were having neighborhood meetings on development projects, and the developers were coming in and stacking our meetings with their friends, whoever. So I'm a facilitator also, so I'm attempting to facilitate all this, and I'm observing this. So... one of the things I decided we wanted to do was to, at the beginning of a meeting, identify who's in the room. Who's here? Where do you live? And what is your position here at this meeting? And we started doing that. As a facilitator, I've developed a process whereby, you know, you can have a meeting and everybody in the world can be in at the meeting, and you can have commentaries and everything, and as you do the commentaries, whether it's verbal or with sticky dots and all that sort of thing, you can identify the source of the comment. And this comes back around to the whole business that Madison is designed as a city with aldermanic districts. And aldermen are responsible to their voters, and their voters are residents.
Well, I think you could ask the same questions of neighborhood business associations that have voting members that I don't know what their policies are across the board, but if you're a homeowner in an area, can you show up to the Greater Willie Street Area Business Association and ask to be a voting member of that if you don't actually own a business there? I don't know. But is
Matt
the city going to dictate that?
The city doesn't recognize neighborhood business associations. There's no city recognition of business associations.
Well,
that's the difference, is that there's an official city.
Well, except that here we are, as Bert points out, we're here in these recommendations, we are asking that if there's a neighborhood business association, it be part of the process.
And what really all I'm saying is that it doesn't really matter that a non-resident cannot be part of the voting strength of the neighborhood association. That is not relevant to this conversation. Mm-hmm. What is relevant is how do you engage all these diverse elements in a meeting about a project that's coming into an area?
But Bert, it is relevant. If I have a substantial investment in a neighborhood, whether I live there or not,
mm-hmm.
whether I live in the city or not,
mm-hmm.
I should have a right to have a voice in what takes place in that neighborhood.
Absolutely. No argument there at all. You absolutely ought to. And that voice ought to be, an alder ought to be able to distinguish that voice from the voice of their the people who elect them.
So we're making it political as opposed to what's good for the city.
It is political.
And they absolutely have a voice. There's no doubt that they can show up, they can speak, they can send information, they can meet with the alder.
But should they also not be able to vote?
But according to the process...
Here's another piece of all this that I've recommended forever, and that is that the Neighborhood Association, and I've even had some... struggles within capital neighborhoods on this. The Neighborhood Association should never vote on a development proposal. They should simply send a report that reflects the meetings that have been had, and that report ought to reflect the voices that speak in various ways about the project.
And we make
that's
that
one of the
yeah. Here,
yeah.
Yeah.
And where is that in here?
Well, but I think what Bert's getting to here is the fundamental question of what balance we're trying to strike with point two.
Mm-hmm.
And point two specifically talks about the neighborhood associations and the ability to have this meeting and have this discussion. And one of the things that's not clear, I think, is the level of outcome of these discussions and what it means to the process. And I think that's a very good point, because
B3.
if it is a point where we're getting into yay or nay vote of what takes place, then we're getting to a point where I think we've all agreed that business owners in that area should have the ability to have some recognized voice there.
I don't think we're anywhere near that point in this discussion. I mean, we're talking about all we're talking about right now is sort of pre-application phase, a meeting and notification of key stakeholders.
Yeah, and it actually comes up in B3.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But B3.
B3, what page is that?
Yeah.
Page 21.
Okay, thank you.
So, okay.
Yeah.
And that's where you're talking about comments with a range of viewpoints and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any neighborhood association really ought to ever vote on any of this stuff, frankly. Because the decision isn't made at the neighborhood level. You know, the decision is made at the city committee level and
right.
council.
And as we have seen very obviously recently, there can be a wide variety of viewpoints within a neighborhood.
Yeah, I think, having an ascending and a descending kind of an opinion. You had that last week with Darcy and the Regent Street neighborhood. She came in and said, we took a vote. This is what the vote was, but there were some dissension.
Mm-hmm. All I really want to get at is that I just don't think that a document like this ought to specify to a neighborhood who their members can be. And if you're going to, and in your own document, you kind of contradict yourself by, in the one place, saying neighborhood associations, and then they basically include residents, business people, and such like. And then you sort of turn around and say neighborhood associations and neighborhood business associations and make them two different things.
Well, I think I agree with what you're saying. If we then would say that positions taken by associations should not be considered. Well, because there's no process for making sure that that association reflects anything other than, you know, its own internal ways of composing itself.
I mean, that's
a pretty provocative statement to say, but otherwise, you have no consistency. We don't meet the goal for consistency at all.
I don't think neighborhoods should take positions on them. I think they ought to give reports that reflect the cross-section.
Right, but the only way to enforce what you're saying, which I agree with, is then for those that do, not take it into account.
Well, you'd have to do the same for business associations.
Right,
as
right,
well.
I agree.
You'd have to say that because there's no...
Right, which there isn't. So in fact, we don't even recognize them formally.
So Section 2, A, B, and C, in the pre-application phase, does that address the appropriate amount of voice that we want to have for the neighborhood associations and this pre-application phase? Does that fundamentally address it? I guess is the question. So I'd like to say that we go through the rest of two here and see if that fundamentally addresses that question. If it does not, then I think we have a bigger discussion to have, but I'd say we go ahead and have Tim take us through the rest of this.
Can I ask how long people think they want to be here tonight? I really need to go around 7. I didn't think we'd be here longer than 2 hours tonight.
And I frankly don't intend to stay very long.
That's all I had budget for tonight.
And I didn't think I was going to say anything, but this whole thing just kind of began to...
Or would it help if we take that neighborhood piece out on page? Just let's just finish this. I put the urban design landmarks and plan in there. Should we? This was the description, I believe, in the neighborhood association piece of the city's website. I mean, this was copied directly out of that.
Well, I think that I would say yes. Take it out. I think that what's relevant here to this document is the current mission statements of the city's entities. The neighborhood associations are a dissimilar thing here.
Okay, then you also may want to talk with the neighborhood, who is it there, right?
Jewel.
Because this is what the description of the neighborhood association is.
Yes, but neighborhood associations aren't official.
They're not an official body of the city, okay. Therefore they shouldn't belong with
belong in this.
Not necessarily that the definition isn't right, but it just doesn't belong.
It doesn't belong in this class of entities.
Yeah.
Okay. They have no power.
The only thing I would like to include on page 18, when we're talking about the individuals to invite to this, I would just also would like to see the word and other stakeholders, because there are residents who they don't belong to the neighborhood association. You know, as the executive director of the neighborhood planning council of looking over 11 of them, I know that there are some who don't join for particular reasons.
Yeah, I think that's covered in B. This is the first meeting, and it should be a small meeting. It should be the Alder DPC meeting staff. I think that's covered then in B.
Okay.
Please get the word out there.
Okay.
All right.
And I guess, I mean, I would even say for A right now is we change it to require a meeting within 30 days with all these following individuals in attendance. I mean, I can see situations where one of those says, I'm not coming, or I'm not. I mean, for me, the important thing is that the developer makes the invitation and makes a good faith effort to have those people at the table or those interests at the table. I mean, I think that to me at least is a question of whether you want to hold a project back because the Alder blows off a meeting or because, I mean, I don't think you do, you know, because Alder Clear refuses to come to meetings with people, right?
Well, it's always hard to coordinate.
Right.
And maybe the answer to this is that DPCED staff sets up a calendar, sends out a notice, fill in the blocks here, whatever the hell it's called, try to get everybody together. We have the meeting at City Hall.
All right, so then
if we're going to require
changes,
it, then, there needs to be a pretty specific process for it.
All right, so then it changes from it being the developer or the owner responsible for setting this up, to DPCED being the driving force behind A and B of point two.
Well, I don't think the staff is the driving force for B necessarily. I mean, that's what I was saying earlier. That B, as it's currently written, has some question about who's actually enhancing this notification. It seems it talks about the Alder doing certain things, talks about residents posting certain things. I don't see staff really in B very much right now at all.
Well, staff may generate that notice. be able to generate some stuff on, like we talked about, signing up for an email alert on specific projects and stuff.
Yeah.
But the ideal here was we need to be able to make it easier for the alders to be able to have their neighborly meetings also.
Right.
And we even talk about significantly increasing their budget for both mailing and for finding meeting space.
Should also have a budget for facilitators, frankly. I'm not kidding.
One of the things
you need to disclose
about,
that as part of
actually, Bert, you'll be interested because we do talk about within the organizational development department on Appendix H, especially for the very complex projects, being able to both provide internal resources, but then also figure out whether or not we need to have external resources involved there. Because I think you're right, a professional facilitator can bite through a lot of this crap.
Yep.
Excuse me, process.
Thank you.
Okay,
are you clear on the actions for A and B?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
I just want to mention that we did reserve this room only until 7 p.m.
We're all happy.
We're all
happy. I cleared my calendar.
Thank you for
that. I knew this was going to go all
that. That's lovely to be with you.
Thank you for listening to me.
All right.
Thanks,
Bert. We're going on to B. We've got quite a few of these to do.
Well, in reality, I think...
Just because we're on page 21 of 88?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I think that most of the discussion is going to be on the pre-application phase.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think the inside baseball of how the city deals with the process once it gets into, you know, the meetings and the approvals and the zoning and everything else, that's pretty much inside baseball. And then the administrative improvement are going to be some recommendations that are going to take some changes in staff and money. And those are going to be choices that the council is going to, quite frankly, have to make.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor asked that we give some options, which we have done. And then it's up to the council to pick and choose what they want to do. I think, really, once we get through pre-application B and C, this is going to go a lot quicker. The question is, do we want to try to do it in the next 4 minutes?
No.
I do think that we should come back to this point. I mean, if we're making recommendations that we think are really going to help the process, and in facilitation, it's been one of those that has come up on a lot of different sides of this discussion. If that's, I mean, we all recognize there's a cost to it, and that's why we're hesitating to put it in here. But if we think there's real merit to having trained facilitators, and
I thought we did put it in.
Is it in there in a real way? Where?
It's in there, yeah. For complex.
The for
question,
complex
the
stuff,
question
yeah.
is, for instance, yeah. Should the developer hire an outside facilitator? Well, they hire Bert, or they hire Munson at Vandewall, or yeah. But the point is, who should be paying for it? The city certainly
right.
cannot provide a facilitator
right.
for every deal out
right.
there.
Right.
For the ones that we know and recognize are going to be complex, we can have Carl and Guy and the organizational development staff, and they've written up an appendix both for helping
yeah.
and training alders, neighborhoods, and so on.
In a lot of cases, the alder can be the facilitator, but some of them are good at it and some of them are terrible.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's
I think, quite frankly, when we get to that point, I think we should probably consider who that might be. Because it is, I've got some very interesting anecdotal stories, Mark, of external facilitators involved that in the end there was less than credible work being done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that there's a level of impartiality along with that role, and I think the best people that play that right now off the top of my head would be the staff. But I think it's something that we should definitely look at a discussion.
Right. If the developer is hiring, you know, Brian Munson as a facilitator, he's not impartial. Nobody would accuse him of, I don't think he would presume to be impartial.
Right.
He's the developer's, you know, spokesperson. Model.
Yeah.
And the city staff, and one of the concerns that I discussed with organization development is the fact that we may have to hire some professional facilitators and work with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the city staff that's there now, in a tough one, they fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
The city, they don't fall apart, but they're just not equipped
right.
professionally to be able
it's
to deal
with it.
It's
a very specific skill set.
Yeah.
I mean, it really
they're
is.
Not, yeah, they weren't hired to be facilitators.
Now,
right.
the police department has volunteered, however.
If I could just throw on there, I mean, the facilitators, it's particularly in this stuff, you almost want, like, merging someone from the planning staff with someone from the organizational development staff. You want a facilitator who is also skilled in planning and urban design issues and traffic engineering, having some expertise.
Knows the language.
Right, knows all of this.
And that's not Carl's or Guy's job at all.
Right.
And then there's the question of who do they work for, right? Because sometimes some projects are seen as priorities for alders or mayor or the city, and sometimes you know, you need your facilitator to be independent. Not always is the city seen as a neutral observer in this space.
And so. you're right, but maybe we can combine. We're talking about possibly some additional staff as project managers for complex. They could become cross-trained as facilitators, and I think, again, for the most part, that could work. And there's specific instances where it might be a little bit more difficult. We have to insulate it away from political pressure. It has to be, you know, professional as opposed to politically driven. What we said last time at the EDC meeting, this is the process improvement, not the process perfection plan. We're gonna learn as we go.
Yep.
So, all right. So with where we're at now, we finished up on A. We got B and C left on pre-application, and then we'll get into the other ones. I would recommend that we've got a few things that we got to do for the next meeting, but I'd please highly recommend that everybody go through the rest of this document and have available for discussion at our next meeting the points that we need to be discussing at each of these levels so that we can knock these out a little bit quicker. Does everybody agree with that homework?
Mm-hmm. Has everyone looked at Ed's comments?
I've looked at some of them, not all of them.
Okay, so they're not, and we can't go ahead and integrate these carte blanche. We're going to have to go think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's got to be part of it.
And also, we presented at the November EDC meeting the November draft. From that November draft, DMI, the bid, the chamber, Smart Growth Greater Madison, and CNI did submit some pretty specific suggestions and comments that they had. So at some point, as with Ed's comments, you're probably going to need to go through those and either say, yes, we agree with that, no, we don't agree with that, or...
All right, so that's everybody's homework, to cross-reference that and come back to the table so we can knock this out. And I would say the next meeting, we probably slate it for 3 hours.
At least. Now, will you make a report to the EDC meeting as far as what we've done so far? And also, just remember, these are recommendations. They don't have to go in here. They have to wait.
But they should be waiting. Otherwise, they'll come back.
Can I just make a request? I know that there's a couple of... I know you guys are going to do some revisions to the text. Is there any way that can be circulated before the next meeting?
For the 25th?
Yeah, even if it's the day before, just, you know, going in, if there are substantial changes at all.
Yeah, but I'm going to be doing it, you know, as I'm walking
at
in
the meeting.
Yeah.
Fair enough, just text me.
Yeah.
Can we say Thursday before or Friday before?
The meeting's on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
As I said to start this, we can have goals.
Monday.
Say Monday morning.
Monday morning?
Yeah.
That won't require. We'll encourage.
Okay.
Can I have the committee's okay to go through this and at least boost up the weak language?
Yes, please.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'll do that. Should I have a new revision available for the next EDC meeting, or should we just concentrate on dealing with
it? Not before the subcommittee has seen it.
Deal with this.
I think we should just report back to the full committee next week that we met, progress, here's what, you know, we're still on timeline.
Kind of our goal.
I don't think we should muddy it by showing them a even slightly new, little bit new draft. Yeah.
Do you guys deal well with red lines or not?
I'm fine with red lines. I know some people are weak about red lines.
I hate red lines.
I love red lines.
I love red lines.
Yeah, red lines are the way.
That's the way.
Yep.
What?
No. Third or fourth revision or not.
That's why you use
different colors.
I had an attorney just recently recommend to me a red line contract to send out to everybody because that's kind of the way they want to do this thing, right? And I sent it out to the five people that were bidding on the project, and everyone to a T was like, what are you doing? And he's sending me an 80-page red line document. Send me a 20-page clean document.
Well, if you send the Word version rather than a PDF, then turn off the red lines if you don't want to see them.
Okay, so that's what we'll do. You'll circulate a red line.
No.
I say after you're redlining the PDF.
No. You'll circulate it in a stronger revision, and then we'll do our
No. There. We're gonna deal off of this copy that we've got in front of us.
All right.
I'm just asking for permission to go ahead without making substantive changes
boost the language. Mm-hmm. Back to the
voice. I agree.
Especially Vicky's comment about active voice.
Yes.
You know, make sure we're saying who's going to do it.
And if there's a question,
we might disagree with you about
it, but we don't know.
Right.
So you could
pick somebody.
You could put a blank question mark, but, you know, blank, we'll do this,
right.
And we'll discuss it.
Well, and some of it,
if it's not specified, you...
Because it's going to go to, some of this is going to go to, like, engineering department. There still has to be an implementation plan.
Right.
These are recommendations. There still needs to be implementation plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to Mark's point, and to Vicky's point earlier, there needs to be a framework in this plan that spells out how that's going to get done.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think at least the framework has to be there.
I'll put the framework in about how it's going to go. We'll approve it, goes to the council. They approve and instruct, and where it goes from there.
Okay.
And maybe you might want to start thinking about metrics too, because we haven't. We talked about
we
should put them in.
Yeah, we didn't really get to that.
But maybe you should start thinking about how can we, you know, measure this in 1 year.
Okay.
We'll start sending the Madison satisfaction survey. We'll do another one for business developers and investors.
You don't have your
state line.
I think it's a good one.
Tonight?
All right, anything else today that we need to address? Okay. Motion.
Move to adjourn.
Meeting.
Second.
That's one of the best damn chairs I've ever met.